Hey everyone, I'm Megan Gilligan, and you're listening to episode 188 of the Weddings for Real podcast. And this time, we're sharing another episode from our Unraveling series. These episodes are really powerful and some of the most listened to episodes that we have. So thank you for tuning in, whether you're a longtime listener or a first-time listener. And for those of you who haven't caught one of these episodes yet, the Unraveling series is where I invite respected and well-established entrepreneurs to share the messy growth that got them to where they are today. It's the story of their unraveling of old habits and limiting beliefs that held them back and the rebirth of the new. This series was brought about when I heard Brené Brown's definition of a midlife unraveling last summer, and I have to tell you, I believe an unraveling is a good thing. The shiny, imperfect versions of industry thought leaders aren't real life, and it's not who we really are as humans. So I hope these stories in this series speak to you and leave you feeling inspired and not so alone in your own journey of growth. So far, I've shared the unravelings of Andrea Eppolito, Sarah Margolis, Alea Harris, Adriana McDermott, and me. Today, I chat with someone who looks to be crushing it, because, well, she is. She has over 30,000 YouTube followers and always seems so poised and focused on camera. You may have seen her ads on social media everywhere, and she comes across as calm, authoritative, and friendly. I've even gotten her email funnel and found myself purchasing some of her templates because they're so good. But underneath it all, she's encountered struggles just like the rest of us. And that's what we're sharing on episode 188 of the Weddings for Real podcast. Hey there, I'm Megan Gilligan, and this podcast is for fellow wedding pros that know what it really takes to thrive as a professional in the wedding industry. Because it's not what they show you in the movies. Spoiler alert, it takes more than a wave of a wand or the toss of confetti to take someone's special day from big idea to big success. This podcast is a wedding professional's safe space to laugh and dish about the glitz, the not so glam, and all things weddings, for real. My guest today is Ashlyn Carter, copywriter and owner of Ashlyn Writes, a copywriting business specifically for creatives. Ashlyn started her career in marketing and PR, and she was working for a hospitality company where she would go to industry events and hear the struggles of business owners who wanted to figure out the best things to say to prospects and clients.
And I would hear them talk about their uncomfortableness with like responding to an inquiry email or arguing for their, you know, raising their prices $3,000 and arguing for that. And I was like, that's all I've done is like direct response copywriting. I'd love to try that with a creative slant. And that was the birth of my business. And that was about 6 years ago. And God's been good because I did not study business. I studied journalism and we've slowly just figured it out and I've loved the ride.
That's how most of us do it, right? We just figure it out. But it's not without all the potholes in the road along the way.
My business itself was born from an unraveling. And I think you said when we were kind of before the show, that it's that quote, what got you here won't get you there. Like when you hit that wall and realize like, okay, I have to like re-architect the way my brain thinks about this. So my business, and I know I've shared my story in so many capacities, so I won't stay on this one long, but I did like hit a wall before I started my business where I was partially hospitalized for anxiety, depression, and eating disorder. And it was in that moment, I was like, I don't think work is crap. Like I think working doesn't need to look like this idol that I've made it. And like this glamorous, at least I thought it was glamorous, like heels and late nights and phone under the pillow, kind of like Devil Wears Prada lifestyle. And so that was my first like building my business and trying to, in the process of building my business, Ashlyn proof it, because I know I'm on to myself. I have my number. I know that I am so prone to just certain tendencies. Yeah. Number one would be that my business was born from all that. Yet the second unraveling moment, I remember it was a year into business. And as a service provider, which I know most of the people listening to this, like we have so many of us have what everyone call it, cobbler's children syndrome, or like always a bridesmaid. Like we, client services is such a delight to perform and to do and to get to like shine the spotlight on other people. But it is simultaneously so hard to build your own business. Yeah. And I remember it was January 2017. I was at a like a peer-led mastermind. I started like sobbing on the floor because I realized I was like, I have built so many other people's audiences, email lists, campaigns, funnels, websites. I got nothing like that for myself. And like having to make the commitment that I was going to dig into that was this, you know, and like hold my feet to the flame and start saying, okay, well, that's going to look like a commitment of emailing every single week to a list that I don't really have. Yeah. I've got to work on this. So that was the second big unraveling, like come to Jesus moment. And then I would say the third and the one I'm in the thick of right now is making that switch from possibly, I would say spending like 60 to 70% of my time on my craft and 30% managing and leading. I'm now realizing I'm the executive of a business and a team. And that means about 70 to 80% of my time is spent pouring into them, getting them what they need, driving the vision, reminding of the vision, shaking hands, meeting people, all that kind of stuff. And that is like making that switch is so messy right now for me, because as my executive assistant put it, she was like, there's scaffolding, Ashlyn, that I know you keep seeing. It's going to come down. Like the scaffolding of the building does come down, but we have it all up right now. And it's really hard to see past that. So that's the place I'm in right now. And yeah, it's so messy. It's so hard.
It is really messy. I have questions. Can I?
Okay.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yes. Open book.
You said that you need early on, like figuring out how to Ashlyn proof your business because you have certain tendencies and you've got your number. That stood out to me because I feel like I think many listeners can relate to that too. And those tendencies, what are some of those? Is it overworking? Is it saying yes to things that you perhaps don't want to do, but like the people pleasing side comes out? Like, what are your tendencies?
So good. So I'm pretty open about it too. I still deal with, say that five times fast as a Southerner. I still deal with some anxiety, and medication is a good thing. Yep. It's so like giving my brain white space to think is really hard. So that's like the first thing is like, I know that I get to an unhealthy, like I have to learn how to deal with anxiety in a healthy way and not, because I've seen what happens when I don't.
Right.
So I'd say like, that's the first thing is setting up parameters, whether that means like, if I need to walk away and take a 20-minute nap in the middle of the day, I got to do it. Mm-hmm. If I need to go take a walk, I do it. Like if I need to call like an emotional day and just like rest that day and work that night, that's okay. Like I don't have these rules that I have to adhere to. Maybe like that was, you know, when you work for somebody else sometimes that you have to like, and they have certain expectations of you, but like, no, I built this business for me. So, that's one thing. And then I think the second thought I had when it comes to like Ashlyn proofing it is exactly what you said about saying yes and no. I tell my team and they know I've got two speeds. I have Oprah. Yes. You can have everything. Like I will bleed to serve you. And I have B word speed where I'm like, no, I tunnel vision. And I have a really hard time finding the middle of that. So having now, like we just hired on an executive assistant. And so she's 9 to 5 every day. She's like my right-hand guard. I've got a German shepherd asleep at my feet right now. She's like, to me, she's like the visual representation of that with my time. And like, I've had people in positions like that before, but never a 9 to 5 employee investment. And it got to the point where I realized like, I need to make that investment. Like I cannot, like, I could see like, I haven't watched Star Wars in forever, but I feel like it's like, we both got lightsabers and like, she's got my blind spot. I've got hers. And like that, I've never had somebody in 9 to 5 like that. You know, it's been like a few hours a day. And as you know, business does not turn off after, you know. So those are some ways I'm trying to continue to proof my business for myself.
I love that. And I think that's going to be so relatable for listeners because the people pleasing. I mean, in the service industry, a lot of us get in, specifically in events, like we get into this because we love the connection. We love serving others. But then the level that we go to can send us into a lot of really, I think, dark places. Like I know my entrepreneur brain has, my inner critic of like, why do you keep doing this? Why do you keep making the same like boundaries? You have the boundaries and then you let someone go past them. And why do you say yes to things? And then you find yourself like resenting the work that you're doing and feeling like that inner frustration and annoyance at yourself. And I think that can be really hard. And I'm curious if you have any advice for someone that is newer into their business. So they're a couple years in, they love what they're doing, but maybe they're starting to like try to figure out how to proof their business for their own bad habits. But maybe they're not in a place where they can hire someone to be that protector just yet. How can they be their own protector? Are there certain like boundaries that you set prior to having this person that could be applicable to someone that's listening to this right now?
Yeah, that's so good. I remember in, it was like one of my first paid masterminds I was in, hearing a girl and she was like, yeah, I have Ashley or like whatever. And she was like, it's just me. You know, so there's always that route where you can like make up the name and respond. But I think maybe it was because I came from corporate, but being then going into the creative world and seeing this like boundaries be a little bit more flexible and broken, I was like, what? Like you let people text you? Like I had a different approach, but I wanted what I had a crush on in the creative world was that level of like beauty and connection. And so how do you meld that? So we onboard our clients. Like I do not take onboarding lightly. From the minute they reach out, like the pricing magazine that they get about our culture, our values, how we work, we are an agency. Like it is not, you do not get just me. And that's to get you the best product possible. Like, in fact, I do not want you to just trust my brain because it's a crazy place. Like you need these other people. And so like selling them, continuing to sell somebody on your methods and your ideas, even after they've signed that contract through. And then we have a welcome magazine for them and getting them like making sure they understand exactly where to go, not being afraid to tell them like when, you know, if they do send an email and it goes outside of HoneyBook or they send a direct message with a screenshot, hey, thought you'd want to see this for some research. Like, thank you. We need, like, we have canned answers, push them back, train them back to where to go. And then throughout the whole, I mean, our whole experience is broken down to the 0.25 of an hour. So 15 minute mark. So we know exactly how long every single thing takes. And that's just to get the client the best thing possible. So that, especially when it was just me still having those, you know, taking the entire business days to set aside to build that out has been so important because it's only grown as our team has grown.
I think that's so important to highlight, and we need to hear it again and again that like our onboarding process and how we're welcoming our clients into our business, setting those boundaries. And this is something else that I remember hearing, I think also from Brené Brown, but boundaries can be clear and kind. Like boundaries are kind, right? They keep you from feeling that resentment and annoyance towards your clients. They let them know like, hey, here's the process. Here's how it works. And when we have those boundaries, but then they continue to get crossed, we kind of have to look back at ourselves and say, okay.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Well, I was listening to a podcast recently or something, and they were saying like, oh, it was the billion-dollar coach about, I think his name's Bill Chapek, who coached like Steve Jobs and Larry Google. I can't remember his last name. Anyway, but he was saying like when they have a bad hire, he said that's like on you as the business in the business, and that's on the team. And it's the same with clients. You know, we know that. I have found like I've never had, and we've had, I should count again, number of one-on-one clients that we've had in the business. I've never had a client push back and be like, I'm paying you, like you answer to me, you answer my texts or anything like that. Cause exactly like you said, I think if anything, they're looking to like, you are the leader. You need to lead them. You need to guide them and show them how you expect to hear from them. And like, you need to be proactive enough that they're not left guessing. We've all been in that position where you're like, what did I just pay for? Like, can I reach out? How do I reach out? And that's an awkward, terrible feeling.
Yeah, because to me, it's the unknown in a relationship like that that creates anxiety and leads to a client that is like trying to micromanage the process because they don't know what to expect.
They don't know, yes, because you hadn't educated them. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, so good. Okay. You also said something about the assistant that you have on your team that you're right now trying to shift. And I know this is going to speak to so many of the entrepreneurs that are listening to this. You start your business and you're doing all the things. You're wearing all the hats. You are your CFO, your CEO, your director of HR, your payroll, your everything.
Take out the trash.
You do everything. Yes.
Most of us still do, right?
Yes. Yeah. Until it's like overflowing here in the corner. But you're doing all the things and you're seeing the vision for where you want the business to go. You realize like if someone's not steering the ship, we're just going to be out here in the water, like floating around. And that feels messy, right? Do you find yourself questioning like, okay, these people are looking to me to tell them, you know, what comes next? They're looking to me to have all the answers and I don't always have all the answers.
Yes. And even though when I think my kryptonite, like my weakness is that I sometimes think I've communicated something and I have not done it clearly, or I need to over communicate or say it a couple of times in different ways so it sticks for them. Like I can't expect something I said in passing on a Voxer to be like, when I meant that as like, I was saying, you know, this is probably the area where personal development wise, I'm growing the most right now. Like how to communicate a vision with like action steps to somebody well, and let them feel entrepreneurial in their own role. And like, they do have ownership and, can make it what they want. The biggest light bulb, I think, to me that's helped with this is Mike Michalowicz's book, Clockwork, where he talks about the queen bee role in your business that you have. And it's not like in a beehive, the queen bee, she's important, but it's what she does that is important that like the hive can't survive without. So trying to figure out like, what is my like 1 to 3 queen bee roles where like must be guarded and protected at all costs, or like we don't have a business, and realizing I've got to figure out little by little how to like let go to grow and be able to pass some of those other things along. And I know all of that's easier said than done, but it really does help when I come back to like, but what is my like queen bee role? And then what is Claire's? What is Meg's? What is Sarah's?
Yeah, I have a hard time with that too. And I think my kryptonite is not communicating the vision, but more like continuing to be too busy as the leader. Like I'm doing all the bee things. I need to stay where I'm at and make sure like the hive is good. But I'm like, oh, doing this, doing that. And I think that's what a lot of us do as well.
Yes. I think like the biggest, so here's like one thing we're going to try to start doing, because as the team has grown, I've realized where I used to have my morning like rest to wind up routine is what I called it. Like the 5 things I would do every morning when I sit down at my desk, I'm going to have to reshuffle that, because what was like check Slack, check Voxer, you know, like eyeball the inbox, my folder in the inbox. Now, because like I look up and that's a vortex and 3 hours have passed and like I'm still doing those tasks. So realizing I need to be like, go back to the days in my business where I was a maker in the morning, manager in the afternoon. And like, I need to build stuff for like 2 hours in the morning. Nobody talk to me, just focus. Like Claire's my guard dog, you know, like, and then in the afternoons, go back to like managing people, checking on people, loving on people, shaking hands, talking to people, all those kind of things. But like, that's what I've been realizing is that chunk of time has not been getting tackled in the morning. And that's the thing that like your queen bee role, those are things that make us money. You know, like, that's the thing that like keeps the lights on. And so that's a big shift that we're going to try to, I think I've been trying to lean into the management side a little heavier than they have their wings now. They're, as Claire said, she was like, we're potty trained now. Actually, we're good.
So. Okay. I love what you just said about evaluating like okay, you've had this morning routine. It's been the five things that you do. And that was serving your business for a period of time.
Years. Yeah.
Yeah. And now you're realizing, okay, as the business continues to grow and I continue to grow and my team continues to grow into their roles, like things have to change.
Yes.
Oh, I love that. Because sometimes I think we find something that works, right? We're like, okay, this is working. I'm going to keep doing this. And when it's not working, you just push harder to try to make it work.
Yes. My friend always, Sarah Adler, she always says, I think it's a Tim Ferriss quote, like, what if it were easy? And that's a good, because I'm the same, probably a lot of us type A's. I'm like, but this is the system. Like, this is my SOPs that I've done for years. Like, but there comes a point where your business has grown to a point where that's not serving it anymore. And it's okay to divorce from those things and figure out a new way and make it easy again. And I am queen of gritting my teeth and realizing that the hard way.
Is there anything in your head? And you also said, I have two questions. I loved the maker in the morning, manager in the afternoon. I think protecting that time, that's an aha moment for me hearing you say that.
I think that's a Greg McKeown essentialism thing.
I need to read that book. I felt like I went to go read it and it looked really long. And I thought it should be short, right? If we're talking about essentialism. It should,
if I recall, it didn't take long to read.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah. Do you ever get in your head because you are kind of like this influencer and this known name? You may not like that title, but you're a known name and someone that people look at and respect. And you've got this great, you do a great job of putting videos out and saying, here's how I do these things. Here's how I run my business. When things change, do you feel the need to go back and be like, by the way, I'm not doing it that way anymore. Like I'm doing it a different way.
Yes. Yeah. I am in my head constantly. I could like talk for that for a solid 2 minutes, like stick a quarter in me. I could talk about being in my head. And what I've had to do is realize how the method, like if I taught something 3 years ago, it's not all bad. Like that's what worked when my business was making, you know, 300,000. And like when my team was three people and like that system worked then. Now, like that's, it's almost like, I feel like I have a little bunny trail or a diary of things that worked at certain levels in business. So I'm grateful and I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but I do try to update. If my hypothesis has changed on something, I'm pretty anal about wanting to go back and like correct the record. But if the process still would work, it's something that I want to keep out there. But yeah, I can like talk about what I do to get over it. But yeah, like if you think competition and seeing somebody, getting copied destroys me for a good 24 hours.
Really?
Destroys me. Like breaks my heart, makes me see red. And you can't ever talk about like, you can't ever like post that you're good, you know, or like, you don't want to point somebody out, or I guess like that's the side I've erred on. But if you think that stuff doesn't like get in my head and like I'll lose a business day because of it, or that dude mentality of like compartmentalizing that my husband can do so well, I can't do. And it's part of probably what makes a lot of us female entrepreneurs so good, but it, at the same time can be an Achilles heel. So
yeah, I feel that in a big way.
Yeah.
So something I wanted to ask you was if through these points of unravelings in your business, if this version of Ashlyn right now could go back to year one, year two, you can pick the time frame. We're transporting, we're going back, and you get the opportunity to sit down with her for just a couple minutes and you get to say like, hey, phew, here's what I want you to know. What would you tell her?
That's so good. The first thing that popped into my head is like, don't focus on what's the phrase? I heard it recently. Like the minute you start checking your rear view mirror, you're already going slower. And I think I have had a tendency in business to build, push, and like be in my sweet spot in my zone and then look over my shoulder out of fear. That's when I lose my footing to talk about like faith for a minute, the moments when I'm like, I don't know if God, like, I don't know if I can trust what the Lord's doing here, or that we're going to lose it all. It's all going to go down the hill. Like this recession or the inflation or COVID or whatever, like it's over. Instead of just like trusting, I might not can see the next tunnel or whatever, but I can see the next lily pad to step on. And I can kind of see the one after that. And like, yeah, whenever I've looked over my shoulder out of fear, out of somebody, I mean, again, like direct copying or like anything like that. Or even when, you know, when you have an idea and you look up and you're like, oh, she's already doing that. But like your idea was different, and like letting that hold you back, or thinking, what are some other like limiting beliefs I've had, feeling like I can't niche down that far because, you know, exactly. Like all those little things that you tell yourself when you have a really good idea, I wish I was better at like keeping blinders on and going, because people can copy what you do. They can copy your curriculum, they can copy your methods, but like you and yourself and your personality, they can't. Also, my coach said one time, and I loved it. She was like, I know I can always outgive my competition. Like I can be overly generous than the next guy. And like, I'll bet on that. And I love that. Like, that's what sometimes, yeah, if I ever get in my head, that's another way that is a good antidote to that. It's just, okay, well, I'm just going to like give what they might be uncomfortable giving, and we'll see where that takes us.
I love that. I think one of the ones that resonates, I carry it with me. I've packed this suitcase and I need to put it down. I totally need to put it down. But I carry with me the belief of like, who am I to show up? Like, I wouldn't give myself a grade A as a mom. There's so many things. Like, I don't have perfection and I know perfection does not exist. I say this often as well, but who am I to show up for these entrepreneurs? Who am I to show up in this space? Because I don't have every single answer to everything.
Yep. They're going to be on to me. They're going to realize like, sometimes do you feel like, I think the game of entrepreneurship is like sitting in that and like having the wherewithal to keep going. Because I, the more I like listen to other, I'm like, maybe some of these, you know, like I mentioned that book I'm reading, I just got the Audible book of the, Bob Iger at Disney. And like, maybe those guys never had that imposter syndrome moment. But for the rest of us, at least when I talk to like the people I look up to in business, they feel like that, you know,
everyone feels that.
Yes. And I really think like the game of it is like, how can you keep playing even when plagued with those feelings?
Yep. I totally agree. And that's been an eye opener for me. It's listening to these, it's conversations like this. Like I truly hope that someone is listening to this and is like, wow, me too. Like, I didn't realize they felt that way. I think that's the empowering moments that I hope to put out there, that people can hear that and then take their next step forward.
Yes, me too. Amen. Starting a business is like easy. Staying in it is tough. We're in this together.
Yes. Yes. Can we talk about balancing entrepreneurship and motherhood for a moment?
Yes. I definitely deal with mom guilt all the time. My children right now are 3 and 1. And so, I mean, I even remember the first time I got pregnant with my oldest, thinking like, I don't know if I can do 2 of this. Like, that happened way too fast. Like, I don't know how to do this. And I love it. I think I want to get to I want to get to a place now where I take 3-day weekends regularly. I would like to get my work schedule down to from about like 8 to 2 PM. Mm-hmm. So I mentioned scaffolding earlier. I feel like those are the things I'm working on so hard, because I love mother. I love those little moments. Shay Cochran, one time, it was at some speaking event, I heard her say from the stage, she was like, I looked up and my first child, like I almost missed her first year because of like the things I was focusing on in business. And you don't have to tell any mom, like it goes so fast. And so that's one thing I'm working on now. How can I build this? And trying to figure out, when you look at what you made last year, you're like, okay, what percentage increase this year? You know, like all, you're looking at your metrics, your P&Ls and all, but like, at what point do I not want it to tip? Like, what's our max? Because I want this to be a lifestyle business where like, I can still go like garden with my kids, take off early, grab them, go swimming, like whatever. And if there's going to be a tipping point where I lose that lifestyle for financial gain, like to me, at least in my family, it's not going to be worth it. So trying to figure out like where that, and I think I have a specific number in mind that I'm like, I don't think I want to ever grow past this number, because I'm pretty sure that's the scale that's going to tip.
Yeah. I want to touch on this because part of what I feel like a lot of creative entrepreneurs are feeling, maybe as they're going through their own unraveling right now, is we're coming out of the pandemic, and the pandemic was really hard on the events industry. And I mean,
decimated parts of it.
Yes. Absolutely. So a lot of us now are in this level of burnout, and just our calendars are stacked, and we're overloaded, and we're having trouble getting back to clients. And we're, a lot of entrepreneurs are feeling really, really stretched, so, so thin. If you've gone through burnout and had any insight in what you would speak to someone right now that is like, I don't know if I can keep going, do you have any tips or insight you would share there?
I've never experienced burnout, so I have no idea what that's like. Okay. Just kidding. I experience it like, oh my gosh. I have moments where I'm like, burn it all down.
Same. Done.
Walk away same, all the same. Time. Okay. I was trying to jot down like a few things that have helped me. I think it comes back to three things. So thinking through what would make this fun again, even dumb stuff like, I have a big wall here with all these shelves. Like that's there all day, every day. And so like, what would make it fun? Like I'm going to spend $100 and get some new stuff, rearrange things, like refresh this desk space, move furniture around, redo that board, like find new playlists to listen to, get more candles that I like actually make this enjoyable for me. So that's like one very simple thing that I've done before when I have moments of burnout.
I love that.
I think going like people, getting coached, being in a mastermind, that is the ticket, because it is incredibly isolating to go through burnout by yourself in your head. And while peers are helpful and like people, you know, like colleagues, having a coach that can draw out of you and pull you up to like what you're capable of and that can see something in you that you can't see. I will always pay for coaching in my business. I think it was 6 months in business when I joined my first mastermind, Heather Crabtree. It was so great. And then I did masterminds after that. Then when I had Tao, my three-year-old, I was like, I don't know if I can do this like business and momhood thing. So I didn't do coaching that year and I missed it terribly. And so now I'm like that. It just, I rely on coaches for sure. I will pay for that hand over fist any day. And then the third thing that pulls me out of burnout is learning new things. So taking a course, just getting my brain to think in another direction. Usually to me, that's an online course. I always laugh sometimes. I feel like people are like, oh, I'm in a stage of my business. I don't do courses anymore. I'm like, what is that like? I will always like taking courses in education inspires me. Like that'll pull me out of, slap me on the face a little bit too when I'm in a burnout mode.
I love all three of those things. I'm a fan of this book, this author. Her name is Denise Duffield Thomas. She's Australian, and she wrote a book called Chillpreneur. And then she also has a book called Get Rich Lucky. You got the rest of it. And she talks about incremental upgrades, like little things that you should do to upgrade, like how you work and how you live. And it can be like, because sometimes we find ourselves like your bath mats are like 20 years old.
Yes.
Yeah. Or like your bra is falling apart, but you put the same one on every day. But like taking care of yourself in that way, because a lot of us as entrepreneurs, there's no boss above us saying like, here's your bonus. Go do what you want to with it.
Oh like, my gosh. Megan, that's so good. And a lot of us are like, we know time is we're like penny pinchers too. So I'm like, I'm good. We don't need it. But like the measuring cups that I use every day where I can't read anymore, like what the, like, why not spend $20 and get new accessories every day? Yeah. Little things like that.
Like I brings love joy. That. Yeah. Yes. It brings joy. Yeah. That came from her and it spoke to me, and I've done things like, oh, I'm going to get like a new pillow for my office here. I'm going to get that candle that cost $20 that I would be like, oh, but do I need it? Yes. Because I want it.
Yes. I love how you said, you're right. Cause nobody's going to say like, hey, you got a raise this month or anything like that.
And then thank you so much for touching on the coaching, because I think that I was late to the party for that, and I will never not have a coach once I started down that road. And I think often what happens is, let's say you have never had a business coach before, but you're trying, like, you know, you're in a state of growth and you're reading all the articles and you're listening to all the podcasts and you're watching all the YouTube videos. That in itself can lead to overwhelm because you don't have that like voice there guiding you through personalizing what they would say, like, hey, let's get you out of your head and moving forward in a direction that works for you. So sometimes you go into that digesting all the information, but what you really need is that constant voice.
I love that you said, it's like, I pictured when you were talking, like somebody just like beating a drum over like this steady rhythm. And that's what a coach is, because you know how this works, like content marketing, every YouTube episode, every podcast, like they've got something to sell. And so they're trying to like pull you into their funnel and up their ladder. So they are trying to persuade you. So that's why when you listen to all those things, you want to buy 15 things that are going to help. Like that's the point of what they're doing. And so, but whereas a coach, like, especially once you, you know, bought and paid for that time, like they're just going to like keep you on track with the message that you've committed to them. So amen. So good.
Gosh, I love that so much. Thank you for those things. Those were all super relevant and I think are going to speak to listeners 100%.
Great.
Okay, Ashlyn, as we're wrapping up this conversation, I'd love to ask you, what is one of those things that we hear a lot, like one of those inspirational sayings that maybe you kind of want to poke some holes in here?
Yes, there's so many. Yeah, I won't open up my can of worms. But the one that I think from a marketing standpoint drives me nuts is the whole like girl boss thing, like do what you love and the money will follow, like follow your dreams and like you'll make money, because that completely negates the fact that there are economic principles that will apply to a capitalistic society. And there is product market fit that has to happen. Like, somebody has to be willing to buy what you're selling. And like, if you hadn't taken that into account or done that market research, you can't, good copy, good marketing, good branding is not like slapping lipstick on a pig. And that's, it's not just going to like automatically sell something. The thing has to be valued and wanted and desired. And then you can blow that up with copy and like play that. There's a concept about like when you're selling mouse traps. This is like an old copywriting axiom, like the goal of the marketing and the copy is to like make the mice rats, like make the problem bigger for somebody. But the solution has to work, like the mousetrap has to work, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that sometimes irks me. I usually tell students that are trying to figure out, like, they're like, but I love to paint abstract art. Great. But like, what you need to do then is find the U-sized gap in the market and go fill that. So where's that Venn diagram intersection of what you're passionate about and also what's needed? And that may mean dying to a few things that you have wanted. But my friend Jenna told me one time, it was 2018. She said, sometimes I've just realized I have to let my day job fund my daydream. And so like, if you do get to a place sometimes in business where you realize like, you have to do the business dance a little bit, and that's okay. That doesn't make you a sellout. That doesn't make, that's, you're just being wise and prudent about applying your skill set to where the need is out there. So I'd say that's the myth that drives me the craziest, because then those of us who like do coaching and work with entrepreneurs, you have, you know, them crying because they're, but I love doing this, but well, no one wants it. So yeah. I hate to break it to you.
Tough love.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I totally agree with that. And it made me think it's like a cousin of that statement. And I think it's something like, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. That one too. It's like, really?
Yes. Amen. like I told you at the beginning, it's 10:54 in the morning for me and I already cried once over work today. Like, it's hard, but
yeah,
you know, I would do it all day, every day. And I would do it all over again. It's the best thing ever, even when it's hard.
Same. Oh gosh. I absolutely love this interview with you. Thank you so, so much for going there, for getting vulnerable, for opening up and sharing your story. I know that it is going to help others.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Where can our listeners connect with you and learn more?
Absolutely. AshlynWrites.com is my website. I have a YouTube channel, and I always tell people too, like, it's been my goal to have one piece of free content or education for like all the big things that you may have to write that are a little sticky. So if you can't find what you're looking for, please email and we'll point you to where the YouTube tutorial is or the freebie or whatever it is. So reach out. I've probably done a training on it.
And you have such a great like shop too. Is it the Copy Bar?
Yes, the Copy Bar. Yes, there are tons of copywriting templates there, adding new ones every month. So, yep.
And I think I bought a bunch on Black Friday. They were all phenomenal. Love them.
Yes. I'm a big fan of the sale. So look out for Black Friday. It's a staple.
Amazing. Thanks again, Ashlyn, for coming on the show.
Absolutely.
Well, Ashlyn, thank you so much for sharing your unraveling with us today. And as Ashlyn mentioned, you can find her company at ashlynwrites.com. And from there, you can check out her Instagram or her YouTube channel, which is amazing and where she shares helpful content tips on how to write copy for her business. I also highly recommend her email list. It's one of the few emails that I actually find myself opening on a regular basis. And for more unraveling episodes, check out episode 156, 157 with Adriana McDermott, episode 161 with Alea Harris, and episode 177 with Sarah Margulis. Thanks for listening, everyone. And if you want to share your own unraveling, we want to hear from you. Come join us by visiting our Weddings for Real Facebook group, which you'll find the link in the show notes, or feel free to share this episode on Instagram and tag us. We're at Weddings for Real. This podcast is edited and produced by Earfluence and is brought to you by The Planner's Vault, which has a shiny new website I encourage you to check out at theplannersvault.com. I'm Megan Gilligan, and I'll see you next time on Weddings for Real.